Pastor here on the Gospel Radio Network. I'm Richard Rutledge, along with Ryan Smithing, and we are glad that you have taken the opportunity to be with us here this morning. I want to start things off like we normally do, remind folks of events that are going on. Ryan, we have several flyers, I think, in our stack today, and one coming up this weekend.
Right.
You're planning to be at, and that's the 23rd Annual Shreveport Bossier Lectureship. This year's theme is Oh to Be Like Him, and it is going to be March the 4th through the 6th. And it is hosted by, this year, the Blanchard Congregation. But as usual, it's going to be take place at the Carriage Oaks Church of Christ there in Bossier City, Louisiana. And that's over at 5661 Shed Road there in Bossier City. For those who are unfamiliar where they're located, they're going to have several speakers for the day. And I see they have Scott Kane, and Scott is going to be speaking that day with James Eves and Mornay Stephanos. Now, know several of these guys. I've heard them speak and looking forward to it. Looks like they also have John Binkley on there as well again. That's going to be Friday. Oh, to be, Oh, to be like him in love. John's going to deal with that one. Oh, to be like him in sacrifice. Mornay will deal with that on Friday evening. And then Mornay will start the morning off Saturday at 10 a.m. after the singing. Oh, to be like him in prayer. James Eves will have Oh, to be like him in his commitment to his family. They'll have an open forum Saturday as well. John Binkley will deal Oh, to be like him in soul winning, and then Scott Kane that afternoon, Oh, to be like him in perseverance. And then each speaker will handle the Sunday morning services at the respective congregations who brought them in. And so those events are going to be taking place. And if you would like more information about the lectureship, then you can give them a call at 318-741-3016. Again, that's Friday and Saturday of this week.
And just to throw that in there, we will be broadcasting that live. And since it's Friday night and Saturday, that's going to be live on the main channel. So you can go and click listen live and be able to hear it there. So we look forward to that opportunity. I might also throw out there, too, just hands, whatever you want to call it, thumbs up to those congregations. You know, sometimes we talk about how much even a small congregation can accomplish, but there are four smaller congregations that have joined together in an area and put that on each year. And so it's a good testimony to what we can do if we put our minds to it. So
exactly.
Look forward to being there. Also this weekend, Saturday, March the 5th, is a teacher's workshop for ladies at the Maud Church of Christ in Northeast Texas. If you are able to get out there, this is with T. McCorder and April Meacham. And they will go through on how to organize, how to repair, and some visual aid instruction, as well as just teaching instruction in general. And I've heard good things about that course. And so, again, Saturday, March 5th from 9 to 3. And if you would like to RSVP for that, you can call 512-393-1860. That's the Maud Church of Christ.
I know, like you said, you've heard good things about it. North Jefferson had T and April come out several years back. Many of the ladies went over to that workshop, and they were excited about it. I mean, it's a great workshop. They bring a lot of materials with them because from their bookstore, they bring that along so that there's materials available for purchase at that time. They can go home with back to their home congregation, not only with a lot of instruction that they've learned on how to use materials, but they can also acquire those materials to carry back with them as well. So if you have ladies that have an interest in that, make sure that they attend that workshop over at Maud this weekend. Yep, it's going to be March the 20th through the 23rd. The New Boston congregation is having their spring gospel meeting with Cody Westbrook. And the theme for this year is the Kingdom of God. He He's going to be dealing with topics, the prophecy of the kingdom, the king of the kingdom, and the citizens of the kingdom, each of the Kingsway Boulevard in New Boston. You can get information by giving him a call, 903-628-2891, or going to newbostoncoc.org.
All right. I want to back up. Actually, there's one we don't have a flyer for, but if you have opportunity this week going on, Wayne Jones is doing a gospel meeting up in Broken Bow.
Yes.
And I don't have a flyer on that, but I know tonight and tomorrow night, Wednesday night, I'm sure it's 7 p.m., but if you're in that Oklahoma area, I know they would love to have you, and I'm sure they're having a good time hearing Wayne preach the gospel. So,
all right.
Remember that. And then the Memphis School of Preaching is having their annual lectureship coming up March 27th through the 31st, and this celebrates 50 years of the school's existence and teaching there. And so looking forward to a big time together. We'll be there, Lord willing, with the Gospel Radio Network display, maybe doing some broadcasts there in the afternoon from the school. And so looking forward to being up there once again as well.
And just a reminder, the Focal Point Workshop, it's coming up that end of last week of March, April, last week of April, first week of May. So make sure if you're planning to attend a workshop, it's titled a preacher's workshop, but it's not necessarily preacher's workshop. They're going to have classes that are designed for elders, for youth, workers, for women only. There's going to be a lot of classes that are going on and a lot of instruction going on. Begins on
it'll be April 30th through May the 5th.
Okay, and that is starts on a Friday this year?
Starting some sessions on Saturday.
Saturday this year. Okay, so we're going Saturday through Thursday, I believe. And so you're going to have to plan for that. If you're going to take some time off and go down there, the good thing about the workshop down there, there's no cost. They supply all of the needs there and all the speakers, so they're able to do that. The only cost that may be involved is your housing, but they are, if you're quick enough, there are members there that are opening their homes up and allowing folks to stay with them. So,
right.
But that's limited on their space. They're limited on their space of where the RVs can park as well. But if you are ready and get registered, you can get that information quickly. And I think that you can go to universitycofc.com, and you can register there. But that's what we have out there. Wanted to let you know. We're going to just take just a quick break, and then we're going to come back. We're going to be in Mark chapter 13 this morning. Mark 13. Hope that you have your Bibles handy. And if you're able to sit and study with us, get that notepad out, the pen, and let's study together here in just a few moments. We'll be right back. Good morning and welcome back to Mornings for the Master here on the Gospel Radio Network. I am Richard Rutledge, along with Ryan Smithy, and we are glad that you have taken the opportunity to study with us this Monday morning. I want to remind you, as we're starting, maybe you have a comment or question, something you want to share with us, don't forget about the chat box. All you have to do is log in. In other words, just type your name in there and hit enter. That'll log you in. Then you can share those questions and comments with us. Not like you have to register anything or do anything, but you do just have to type a name in and be able to get those comments in there. Well, we're going to start in chapter 13 this morning, and we're going to do our best to make our way through these 37 verses in the time that we have allotted for us this morning. But let's get started, and let's just read the first four verses as we look at the questions that are going to be asked.
It says, "As he went out of the temple, one of his disciples saith unto him, Master, see what manner of stones and what buildings are here. Jesus answering said unto him, Seest thou these great buildings? There shall not be left one stone upon another that shall not be thrown down. And as he sat upon the Mount of Olives over against the temple, Peter and James and John and Andrew asked him privately, Tell us, when shall these things be, and what shall be the sign when all these things shall be fulfilled?"
Now, Ryan, we're in a chapter this morning that is the parallel chapter, Matthew chapter 24, passages of scriptures that are wrested so much out of context and not even realizing the questions that are being asked.
Right.
And so in order to see the response to those questions, we need to understand the questions before we can even see the answer, because there's clearly going to be several questions asked. Mark gives us just this. Matthew gives us some more information as far as another question that is addressed later, even in Mark's account.
Right.
But here the question is not given. It's just a question about the destruction of the temple.
Mm-hmm.
When is this going to happen? Many people are taking all of this as in reference to signs for the end of the time when Jesus will return, his second coming.
Right.
There's things that we're going to note as we go through here that are clear indications that that's not the case because of the people who remained. But I think it's interesting, if you've ever been to a place, a great architect, you go and you look at these things, and it's kind of amazing when you see them. And I've seen some interesting things. I was able to go and see the Taj Mahal, and as far as an architectural masterpiece, it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's beautiful to behold it. And here they are, and it says, "Teacher, see what manner of stones and what buildings are here." In other words, look at this beauty almost. Look at this. It's been said that the temple, Josephus records it, and he says, "Now the temple was built of stones that were white and strong, each of their length of 25 cubits, and their height was 8 cubits." And so basically we have the bricks, the stones that are there, and they're 37 and a half feet in length, and they're 12 feet or so in height. I mean, that is just a huge, massive stone that is building up this wall. And their breadth was about 12. So, again, we have about 16 feet in their breadth.
Mm-hmm.
And so here are these giant stones. It says that they were beautiful from the outside. It says the vastness, again, Josephus goes on, "The vastness of the stones in the front was plainly visible on the outside, and the inward parts were fastened with iron and preserved their joints unmovable for all future times." So when they're walking by this giant edifice, this beautiful thing, and the massiveness of it, it's like people are not understanding when this could even be destroyed.
Right.
Because it was such a grand thing. I mean, now today with the modern weaponry that man has devised, but in those days it seemed like it would be unmovable.
And I'm sure we're going to get to this anyway, but that's one thought that I think is missed sometimes here. I think some of these questions are designed or intentioned. You see it coming there's still this misunderstanding to them. The destruction of such this magnificence, oh, that must be the end of the world.
Right.
And I think that's where we try to look at this chapter through the eyes of what we know rather than their own eyes and what Jesus was trying to explain to them. And I mean, that's the magnificence of this temple. For it to be gone, oh, that would just be unthinkable.
Right. And it would be something of such great catastrophe that even as we read its description of all of these things coming to it, it sounds like, man, you're coming to the end of some, surely it's the end of the world,
right,
by the description. But think about it in our own times. What, you know, at 9/11, with the fall of the Twin Towers, and you know, just some small man-made thing,
right,
even by comparison. I mean, it wasn't that grand. Yes, it was grand in its height, but not as magnificent as the temple that is described here. And when it fell, it was a national catastrophe to the point that this has changed the world, and this will as well. It is that great of an event, even more so with the destruction of the temple.
And, you know, not to chase a rabbit too far, but I do think there's some lessons there that we can learn, even in the sense of how they thought about that temple and began to trust more in the architecture and the building than the God it was to remind them of. And certainly still a warning today for us. Sometimes we can get so caught up in a building and thinking the building can do great things and the building is where the church is, and remember instead that it was a place just to facilitate us coming together to worship God. And so kind of maybe a little side lesson there to think about.
Right. Further, they describe this temple. It was 100 feet high, with walls of white marble. The roof was gilded with gold, and so it is just amazingly beautiful. Now, you remember, though, when they rebuilt it, that the people wept because it paled in comparison to Solomon's temple. So this is the place. This is where they're walking by. But then Jesus tells them, he said, you see these great buildings, and that's exactly what they were. But he says, there's not going to be one stone left upon another. It shall be thrown down. This is going to be destroyed. And some people would indicate, well, he was just, you know, reading the times. In other words, he just a lucky guess that the destruction of Jerusalem would come and later in AD 70, and it's destroyed, and the temple's going to be destroyed. But one historian kind of rightly brings out the idea, the Romans had no intention of destroying the temple.
Right.
And it was better for them not to destroy the temple. Not the idea that, okay, we're going to allow the Jews to have, but it becomes a trophy. This is our monument of conquer, becomes our, basically our White House, you know, our place, if we're able to do that. And so they, you know, historians have pointed out that Titus had charged, who had charge of the siege there in AD 70, he gave him specific orders and commandments to his entire army, forbidding them from demolishing the temple because he had intended to preserve it. But Jesus says it's going to be destroyed, even though the Romans haven't planned on it.
Again, my mind, we could spend a lot of time there, but, you know, I think of Jesus' response here, and certainly this was a house originally designed to the honor and glory of God, but there's almost a coldness here, I think, to his response that just, you know, it's like a kid rushing up, look at all these wonderful things, and he's like, hey, these things are going to be destroyed.
Right.
You know, there certainly in this context, 80, 70, but the reminder, all physical things are going to be destroyed. And they were missing that. But I think also, too, that lesson of that you get to later in the chapter, that this isn't God's house anymore.
Right.
You've taken and corrupted it. And so I think that's why you can detach that idea of honor and glory from God. And it's just become a building. And he said, you know, it's going to be torn down.
And the fact is, in the Christian age, that's the beauty of the simplicity of Christian worship. Is it's not a temple. It's not a location in Jerusalem.
Right.
And it, you know, and so we see this with this dealing away with it. It's said that when they finally come in, they set fire to the temple, or the, you know, the city, and the fire, it said that it melted the gold that was such an overlay on everything, and it just melted down as the heat melted. It ran down into the crevices of the rocks, and then that's when the guys went in there like gold diggers, you know, trying to get it out, and they destroyed then the temple complex in this way because of their greed. But he continues, and he tells them now they go along, and here again we see, and I think Mark pulls this out a lot more than others, the idea that when they question Jesus, they do it behind closed doors. They do it privately. Mm-hmm. They come to Jesus now, and it says they asked him privately. And we have two sets of brothers here. We have Peter and James, John and Andrew, those first disciples that Christ called. They're in Mark chapter 1. They're now approaching him privately, and they're asking him these questions. They want to know. Now, the questions that they ask, tell us when these things will be. What things? Well, the things that he just said, that these buildings are going to be destroyed. And what will be the sign when all of these things, again, when all of this is going to happen? What are the signs for the destruction of this temple? Now, if we include this, and it's our parallel as well, but in Matthew 24 and verse 3, Matthew includes the question about the end of the world. And so there's the other question is asked also at this time period. We're going to see that question answered in the transition there around verse 30, 31 of this chapter, a transition that takes place and is indicated as well in Matthew 24 and verse 34. He's going to first address the destruction of the temple, then the later question, what about the end of the world? Mm-hmm. And so those are the things we're going to look at. Now, let's see how he answers then the questions concerning the fall of Jerusalem or the destruction of this temple. Let's read verses 5 through 13.
And Jesus answering them began to say, take heed lest any man deceive you, for many shall come in my name, saying, I am Christ, and shall deceive many. And when you shall hear of wars and rumors of wars, be ye not troubled, for such things must needs be, but the end shall not be yet. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. There shall be earthquakes in diverse places, and there shall be famines and troubles. These are the beginnings of sorrows. But take heed to yourselves, for they shall deliver you up to councils, and in the synagogues you shall be beaten. And ye shall be brought before rulers and kings for my sake and for a testimony against them. And the gospel must first be published among all nations. But when they shall lead you and deliver you up, take no thought beforehand what you shall speak, neither do you premeditate. Whatsoever shall be given you in that hour, that speak ye. For it is not ye that speak, but the Holy Ghost. The brothers shall betray the brother to death, and the father the son, and children shall rise up against their parents, and shall cause them to be put to death. And ye shall be hated of all men for my name's sake. But he that shall endure unto the end, the same shall be saved.
All right. He now brings out some points. Verse 5, he lets them take heed that no one deceives you. First of all, beware. And remember who he's talking to. He's talking to his disciples. I mean, he's talking to his apostles right here. And the first four that he calls, these individuals, he says, don't let somebody deceive you because they're going to come. And they're going to claim that I am, the King James Version says that I am the Christ, the New King James, that I am he. Both of those are, the he and the Christ are, I think, are italicized there, basically saying that I am. In other words, I'm God, I'm deity, I'm the Messiah. And they're going to make these claims along the way. And he doesn't want them to be deceived. Matthew 24 and verse 5 gives the same thing where it says, I am Christ. But literally that I am. And it happened. Josephus, along with other historians, they verify this. You know, they say that there were numerous individuals who came and were false messiahs. So he said this was going to happen. But he then tells them, verse number 7, when you hear of wars and rumors of wars, do not be troubled, For such things must happen, but the end is not yet. And again, we're not talking about the end of the world. We're still answering this question here. He's talking about this destruction of Jerusalem. And the idea of wars and rumors of war, I guess we could say that at any time. Mm. You know, there's really not been a length of time. And if you think about when this prophecy is given, you know, say 30 years prior to, or wait a minute, 40 years prior to the destruction, then, you know, there's probably haven't been many 40-year spans of time where there hadn't been some kind of battle or war or things that were going on. But their warning against this, the warning against this is given here. But one historian says there were these outbreaks against the Jews that were taking place. They were in Alexandria and Seleucia. There were many who were slaughtered. Yeah, it says Caligula and Claudia and Nero had threatened war before it finally came and the destruction of the city and the temple by Titus in AD 70. Mm-hmm. So they were, you know, these things must come to pass. There's going to be these wars and rumors of wars. But the end is not yet. For nation will rise up against nation, kingdom against kingdom, and there will be earthquakes in various places and will be famines and troubles. But these are the beginning of sorrows, not the end.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we look at some of these things that went on, the earthquakes, the famines, the volcanoes, the eruption, even if Pompeii, I think, falls into that same period of time frame in there. They're going to hear some of these things. But these calamities are the beginning, not the end. So he tells them then in verse number 9, but watch out for yourselves. What's going to happen? For they will deliver you up to councils, and you will be beaten in the synagogues, and you will be brought before rulers and kings for my sake and for the testimony of them. And think about this idea of what's going to happen and the persecution that's going to come. And it happens. We read the book of Acts, and we see it over and again, that happening in Acts chapter 5. Right. Remember, they're thrown into the jail by the high priest. Then later in the same chapter, they're arrested again and carried before the Sanhedrin council there. We find the next chapter, Stephen. In chapter 6, how Stephen is put on trial before the Sanhedrin council. And then finally in chapter 7, he's stoned. We see chapter 8 starting out with great persecution. You know, and then that's when they're scattered abroad carrying the word. In Acts chapter 8 there by Saul. But then we find Paul as we get to later in the book of Acts, this one who was the great persecutor, it now tells us this is basically fulfills exactly, you know, what Jesus says here. You're going to stand before rulers or governors and before kings for my sake and and give testimony to them.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, he's in Acts 24, he's before Felix, the governor Felix. In 25, he's before Festus. 25 and 26, he's before King Agrippa. And then later, he records that he is even before Caesar himself. I appeal to Caesar, and he's there, Acts 25 and 2 Timothy chapter 4 as well. So Jesus says these things are going to happen. But the destruction of Jerusalem still has not taken place at this time, but it was coming. It was coming. And so, but when they arrest you, he says, or verse 10 rather, he says, before all this, the gospel is going to have to be preached throughout all the world.
Hmm.
And Paul says that it was, Colossians chapter 1, verse 23, that it was preached throughout all the world. But just you're going to do that, and then you're going to be arrested and delivered up. But don't worry beforehand of what you will speak. But whatever is given you in that hour, speak that. For it is not you who speaks, but the Holy Spirit. He gives the, and again, we always have to remember who he's speaking to. Mm-hmm. And he was speaking to his apostles at that time. He says that the Holy Spirit was going to be given to you and was going to give you those things that were needed. That comforter that he had promised in John 14 and 26 and John 16 and verse 13. He is the one. In Luke, in chapter 21, the apostles were promised this. He says, I will give you a mouth and wisdom which all your adversaries shall not be able to withstand or to gainsay.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we see in Acts chapter 4. When Peter and John, the people, the Sanhedrin marveled because they said, these men, these are unlearned and ignorant men. But they're able to speak these things because the Holy Spirit God had given and Jesus promised that would happen. But there were going to be great persecutions even within families, between brother and brother, between father and child. And you will be hated by all for my sake. The world hated him first, so right. Therefore it hates us. But he says, here's the key. But he who endures to the end shall be saved. Don't give up. Mm-hmm. That's even Revelation 2 and verse 10, that idea of being faithful, even in the face of this death. Be faithful. Don't give up. And so he points this out. Now,
too, there's just this contrast between the purpose. If we understand what Jesus is telling, these are words of comfort. To remind, it's not going to be easy. There's going to be difficulties. And, you know, even today we need to remember that just because I become a Christian doesn't mean everything is going to go smoothly and everything is going to iron out in my life. He's telling them it's going to be hard. But at the same time, he's telling them, I know these things are coming, but you can endure to the end. And so these are words of comfort. When these words are misapplied, often today they're used to incite.
Right.
They're to trouble and to cause anxiety and all the end is near. But that's not what he's telling them. He says these things are expected, but there's still work to do. And so go forth and do it.
And that's the difference of a world view from the Christian from the world. Mm. Okay. I mean, he's reminding them it's a great struggle. And we always have to let people know that. I think we do individuals a great disservice when we tell them that, you know what, your life is better.
Mm-hmm.
And it is better. It's the abundant life, John 10:10. It's the idea that even in this life, as Mark chapter 10, he pointed out, there's great blessings that we get. There's brothers and sisters and mothers and lands and homes a hundredfold. But with it, persecution.
Right.
Even in that, he told them. We're living in a place that we're not really equipped for. We're living in a world that is worldly, and we're trying to live a spiritual life preparing for another world,
right.
You know, and so we're longing for something. We're just, as the Hebrew writer points it out, we're just sojourners and pilgrims through this land, and we're traveling through a foreign land.
Right.
It's foreign for us because it is so worldly, and because it is so foreign and different from the faithful Christian, that it's a hardship along the way. All who will live godly will suffer persecution, Paul told Timothy. So when, you know, we look at that, we think, man, that sounds terrible that all these things are coming. But he also, like I said, you can make it.
Mm.
And even if they take your life, like Paul said, for me to die is gain. It's far better.
Mm.
There's something better that awaits, even if it comes to that. But he points to and instructs them that they can escape these things,
mm-hmm.
this destruction of Jerusalem. You're going to have a hard time, but there are some things that are going to give you the advantage. And he points out now in verses 14 to 23 what is called the abomination of desolation, the sign for that.
Well, when you shall see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet, standing where it ought not, let him that readeth understand. Then let them that be in Judea flee to the mountains. Let him that is on the housetop not go down into the house, neither enter therein to take anything out of his house. And let him that is in the field not turn back again for to take up his garment. But woe to them that are with child and with them that give suck in those days. And pray that your flight be not in the winter. For in those days shall be affliction, such as was not from the beginning of the creation, which God created unto this time, neither shall be. And neither except that the Lord had shortened those days, no flesh should be saved. But for the elect's sake, whom he hath chosen, he hath shortened the days. And then if any man shall say to you, Lo, here is Christ, or Lo, he is there, believe him not. For false Christ and false prophet shall rise, and shall show signs and wonders to seduce, if it were possible, even the elect. But take heed, behold, I have foretold you all things.
So now we have this reminder of a prophecy that was spoken of, and he tells us exactly who said it, and it was mm-hmm. Daniel who brings this prophecy to light. And Jesus uses the term there, the abomination of desolation. And so people, you know, when they see these things, man, this is the end. But notice he says, and he's going to be standing where he ought not. He ought not be. When will this take place, and what is this? Well, notice how he points this out. There, spoken of by Daniel, he's going to be standing where he ought not. And so we're going to see this idea of even the holy place. Mm-hmm. Remember, the holiest of holies, no one could enter in there,
right,
except for the high priest on that day. So we have this event that will transpire. When will it be? Well, if we look at Matthew 24, and verse 15, he's going to be where he ought not, or would be the holy place of God. Or as Luke records in Luke 21, in verse 22, he says, "For these are the days of vengeance, which are written and may be fulfilled. It is a time when the armies are going to be surrounding us here. They're going to happen in that day, but." This record, even as it's spoken, is an event similar to what was seen in 167 when Syria comes in mm-hmm. and they conquer, but they come in and defile and desolate the temple worship because they come in and they offer a pig
right.
upon the altar there, and they sprinkle this mixture all over and defile worship with this unclean beast. Mm-hmm. And so here we're seeing a picture similar of that when the Romans are going to come in and they're going to bring about this destruction. The temple and its worship were defiled by the Jews, according to Josephus. I mean, that's why it was defiled, and then it brings about this destruction by the Romans. But he says it's going to be the abomination when you see it. Even in that, though, but when you see these things, he had just said, but he who endures to the end. Now, when you see it, here's what you need to do. Let those who are in Judea flee. Okay, if this is the end of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't do any good to run to the mountains, because Peter reminds us that when Jesus returns, everything's going to be burned up.
Right.
It's all going to be destroyed. He's going to come like the thief in the night. And all of this that you're going to be running to, or that you're going to be clinging to, it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
If you're on the housetop, here's the urgency, though. It's almost like there's this last-minute warning, this two-minute warning. You know, you've been hearing about it, but now it's here. It's time to get out of town.
Right.
And verse 15 kind of leads to that urgency, because he says, if you're on the housetop, don't go back down into the house or go back in and gather anything. Just get out of town.
Right.
Let him who's in the field, don't go back to get his clothes. Leave. But then he says, woe to those who are pregnant or those who are nursing babies in those days. Again, what would that matter if it's Christ's second return? Right. It doesn't matter any. If a woman was pregnant or nursing, it's not going to be harder on her. Or that it's winter, pray that it not be winter. Verse number 18. But in those days, there's going to be some tribulation. There's going to be tribulation such as has not been seen since the creation, which God created until this time, or nor shall it be. It's going to be some hard, hard times. And then he points out, unless the Lord has shortened those days, no flesh would have been saved. But for the elect's sake, whom he chose, he shortened the days. If he hadn't given them the warning and shortened the time of the persecution for those people where they were escaped, they would have died just like everyone else in the city.
Right.
They would have suffered the same siege and starvation and torture and persecution, and their lives would not have been saved. No flesh would have been saved. Then, if anyone says to you, look, here's the Christ, or look, he is there, do not believe it. For false Christs and false prophets will rise and show signs and wonders and deceive, and possible even the elect. Take heed. Now, here's what he's saying. There's going to be many false prophets. And think about how it works during times of hardship and destruction and persecution. You have so many coming in, so many people who are trying to take advantage.
Right.
Even today, I mean, you have a let's say you have a natural catastrophe, you have a tornado or a hurricane, and you have so many people in there doing good, but then at the same time, you have so many people coming in there trying to offer false hope and take advantage of people.
Right.
And here he warns of that. They're going to come, and be careful that they don't even deceive you. Take heed that they do not deceive you. Because when that hardship hits, you may want to fall prey, but think back. I've already told you everything was going to happen. Remember that I have warned you and told you that these things would come to pass, and that was the mark of a prophet.
Right.
So he has given this instruction. He's given these signs for them to look to, and he does not want any of them to be deceived. Verse 23, he said, but take heed, behold, I have told you all things beforehand. When we see in John 13 and verse 19, from henceforth I tell you before it comes to pass, that when it all comes to pass, you may believe that I am he. Remember these things I've told you beforehand, and understand. And so he points it out. Now in verses 24 to 27, he uses this apocalyptic type language to describe that destruction of Jerusalem, verses 24 to 27.
But in those days, after that tribulation, the sun shall be darkened, and the moon shall not give her light, and the stars of heaven shall fall, and the powers that are in heaven shall be shaken. And then shall they see the Son of Man coming in the clouds with great power and glory. And then shall he send his angels, and shall gather together his elect from the four winds, and from the uttermost part of the earth unto the uttermost part of heaven.
And in these verses, I mean, it's a really apocalyptic description. Mm-hmm. And when we think about how that literature works, it's very visualized.
Okay.
We're still on the same topic, though. We're still discussing the same thing right now. The transition has not taken place as far as talking about the end of the world. Talking about, you know, God's going to take care of his people at this time. When this takes place, in those days, we're still talking about after that tribulation, what's going to happen? It's going to be a difficult time. The sun's going to be dark, and the moon's not going to give her light. The stars are going to fall from heaven. Again, this indication that some would say, well, here's the end of times. Well, all of those things are going to be burned up. Again, we go refer to Peter's reference in this. And if it is the case that they're going to be falling from the sky, they're going to be darkened, that's not what it says.
Right.
All of this stuff will be dissolved, will be done away with. And so we're not talking about the end of the world, but a apocalyptic view and description of the events of the fall of Jerusalem, and he's going to care for his people.
Right. I always think there, and we see it at the end of verse 25, these things shall be shaken, but the idea that these are the foundational things of the, I mean, these are the things we count on. The sun comes up in the morning, it goes down in the evening, It is just that idea. These days are going to be so troublesome, and there's going to be such a shakeup, even in the powers and in the fall of Jerusalem and the kingdoms. And it's just like the foundations of the earth are shaken. Mm-hmm. But it's just to describe that tumultuous time and all these things that are happening. So not necessarily hear this literal occurrence of those things that they were going to see. So,
and even with it, I mean, we can even have a picturesque version of it. I mean, think about when, I was fixing to give you a for instance, but that would have been beforehand, but the Mount St. Helens eruption,
right?
And what happened is that cloud, that ash bank came over, and it does darken that. You get the destruction of the city of Jerusalem, and what's there? But just, despair for so long, and even the stench and the physical of it, of what's going to happen. It's going to darken the sun. It's going the moon's going to hide its light because of this environmental impact even.
I say you have a whole city on fire such as can melt the gold of the temple. That's going to cause a lot of smoke.
Right, and so think about that. When you're in a situation like that and just the despair of it all, that will continue on for afterwards.
Right.
I mean, we could even see some of that, even though, it is the apocalyptic language that is spoken of here. Verses 28 to 30 now, he tells a parable. And this is the parable of the fig tree. So let's read this, 28 to 30.
28. Now learn a parable of the fig tree, when her branch is yet tender and putteth forth leaves. You know that summer is near. So ye in like manner, when ye shall see these things come to pass, know that it is nigh, even at the doors. Verily I say unto you, that this generation shall not pass till all these things shall be done. Heaven and earth shall pass away, but my word shall not pass away.
So he points out with this parable, it really is just a continuation. He now sums it up, and he says, you understand, looking at a fig tree.
Right.
If you look at the fig tree and it starts budding, then these things, it's soonly going to happen.
See the signs.
And now you see the signs. When you see these signs, and here he's pointing all the way back, so also when you see these things happen, what things? These things that he's already been speaking of. Then when you see these things happen, then you know the end is near and at the door. But he says, assuredly, I say to you that this generation will by no means pass away until all these things take place.
Mm-hmm.
Mark has pointed this out. Jesus it reveals it in Mark several times.
Right.
You will not. He tells them in Mark chapter 9 that there are some who are standing here today who will not taste death until you see the kingdom come with power.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what's going to happen? There's going to be some folks here who are alive when it happens. Still.
Right.
If the kingdom hasn't come, then where are those 2,000-year-old people? if this is talking about the end of the age, then where are the 2,000-year-old people?
Right.
Because he says, that this generation is not going to pass away. In other words, there are going to be some here that are still alive before these things happen. So it's not talking about the end. He's referring specifically back to what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And then he reminds them, verse 31, heaven and earth shall pass away, but the words of my words will by no means pass away. The word of Christ, the word of God, will endure. It will stand no matter what. So that was verse 31. But now, after this, transition, basically, about this that takes place there in verse 31, because we've ended this discussion. He says, now, heaven and earth, don't worry. Heaven and earth will pass away. The city's gone, but my word shall not pass away.
Mm-hmm.
John 10:35, scripture cannot be broken. Or even as Peter says, he says, the grass withers and the flower falls, but the word of the Lord endures forever.
Mm-hmm.
This whole world may seem to be giving up, but the word endures. And so now he starts out about a second coming. Verses 32, and let's go through 37.
But of that day and that hour knoweth no man, no, not the angels which are in heaven, neither the Son, but the Father. Take ye heed, watch and pray, for you know not when the time is. For the Son of Man is as a man taking a far journey, who left his house and gave authority to his servants and to every man his work, and commanded the porter to watch. Watch ye therefore, for you know not when the master of the house cometh, at even, or midnight, or the cock crowing, or in the morning. Thus coming suddenly, he find you sleeping. And what shall I say, and what I say unto you, I say unto all, watch.
Here's the point. Get ready. Be ready. And here, completely different than the destruction of Jerusalem. The destruction of Jerusalem. Here's the signs. Watch, 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 watch. When you see these signs, then you know.
Right.
Be ready. But now here, the change is clearly seen. But that day, in comparison to all those days, but that day and hour, no one knows. And Jesus, the one who will be coming, doesn't even know.
Mm-hmm.
Not even the angels in heaven, nor the Son. Now remember, 2 Thessalonians chapter 1, verses 7 through 9, when he says, to you who are troubled, rest with us.
Mm-hmm.
When the Lord Jesus is revealed from heaven with his mighty angels in flaming fire, taking vengeance on those who know not God and obey not the gospel, we see the angels are coming.
Mm-hmm.
We see that the Lord is coming, and neither one of them know when.
Mm-hmm.
The only one who knows is the Father. And so he says, take heed. And he gives this illustration. He says, you know, there are several that he has set in place, but they don't know when the master is going to return. Second Peter chapter 3 reminds us, as well as other places, that he's going to come like a thief in the night. He's going to show up in such a way that people will not be prepared.
Mm-hmm.
They're not ready for it. But he tells people, you can be ready for it. You don't know when it's going to happen, but
right.
if you live a life of being ready and watchful, then you're ready.
Right.
And so he concludes with that simple statement. And what do I say to you? I say to all, watch.
Mm.
And so he tells his apostles that day and concludes with, how do you want to be ready for the second coming of Christ? Don't be looking for silly signs. That was the destruction of Jerusalem. Just be ready whenever your life ends,
mm-hmm.
or whenever the Lord returns.
It still boggles my mind today, even how many will get caught up in these predictions of the end of time. Somebody will publish a billboard. Oh, it's going to end on May, whatever, 2013, I think it was, or sometime here recently. And still people get caught up in that. And so many clear warnings. You don't know the time, and there aren't signs to this coming. It's going to happen. And so live ready, be ready, as you said. And if we stay in that state, then we can look forward to it. We can love his appearing, as Paul will say.
That's it. So many of these, either like the Mayan calendars,
right.
you know, the whole doom and gloom Mayan calendar aspect of it, or even as some of these religious cults and religious groups would do, to say, well, it's going to be at this day and time. And all of those days come and pass. And so what do they do?
Right.
They revise it. They
yeah.
say, oh, no, it's going to be there.
Missed something.
We missed something. And so they just keep moving it back. It always reminds me of Y2K.
Mm-hmm.
It was like the big Y2K scare. Everything's going to collapse, and we're going to, you know, all these problems are going to happen. And then the day passes, right. and it's like, oh, today's just like yesterday.
Uh-huh.
Because they don't know.
Mm-hmm.
They do not know. And to say that you do, I mean, look at what you've done. You've basically done like Romans chapter 1, professing mm-hmm. yourself to be wise, you have become a fool,
right.
and you have elevated man
mm-hmm.
to a place of God, because God is the only one who knows. You have tried to elevate yourself
mm-hmm.
above Jesus
mm-hmm.
because Jesus doesn't know. Jesus says, I don't even know when it is.
Right.
So the reminder in the whole of this chapter, whether it was for his return or for the destruction of Jerusalem, watch.
Mm-hmm.
Be ready. So, well, that's all we have time for today. Tomorrow, Chip and Ryan, Ryan and Chip, will discuss Chapter 14. Mm-hmm. And Lord willing, we'll get to 15 with myself and Chip on Wednesday. Don't forget, you have plenty of listening opportunities throughout the day. In just a moment, you're going to have Morning Point with Denver Horton. It will be followed by The Good News Today with Jim Dearman, and then Reflections Upon the Precious Book Divine at 11:30. Check the schedules on a regular basis. We're looking forward to maybe new shows coming online shortly. And always, we encourage you to tune in each opportunity you have for Mornings for the Master here on the Gospel Radio Network, live from Mount Vernon, Texas, where we study through the New Testament in 2016. If you fell behind on some of those studies, go back to the on-demand section, find the chapter you missed, and catch back up so that by the end of the year, you'll have studied completely through the New Testament in 2016. Till next time, we hope that you have a great and a blessed day.
Listening to Mornings for the Master on the Gospel Radio Network. Remember to join us each weekday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Central Standard Time, or catch the replay at 9 p.m. Central Time. You can also contact us at mornings@tgrn.org if you have any questions we can help you with, or if you have events you would like to submit to our bulletin board, or just with general feedback about the program or network. We would love to hear from you. As we've had opportunity to spend time with the Master this morning in His Word, let's remember His words in Luke 6:46, when He said, "Why call ye me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say?" He goes on to say in verse 47 and 48, "Whosoever cometh to me and heareth my sayings and doeth them, I will show to you whom he is like. He is like a man which built an house and digged deep and laid the foundation on a rock. And when the flood arose, the stream beat vehemently upon that house and could not shake it, for it was founded upon a rock." Let's show the wisdom of that builder and go now to live for the Master.